the soup, and I don't want the lid on it.
You have to put the lid on it?
Ever since that lady at McDonald's got burned by coffee, I have to put lids on hot dogs.
Oh, shoot. Okay, then I don't want it. I'm doing a no plastic thing. Okay, well, thank you.
I've recently become an anti-plastic activist, or plastivist. People like this used to get on my nerves, but now I'm one of them. I cringe when I see people drinking out of plastic water bottles. I have long discussions with deli workers about the evils of plastic. I convince my friends to bring their lunch to work in mason jars, and my kids now refuse straws and lids reluctantly. I spend a lot of time trying to avoid things packaged in plastic at the grocery store, which, if you haven't noticed, is everything. How did we get here? Every year, an estimated 500 billion to 1 trillion plastic bags are used worldwide. 30 billion bottles of water are sold in the U.S. alone. Since these petroleum-based plastics don't decompose the same way organic material does, we can see it piling up. And I think this might be why this new environmental movement is growing. There seems to be more information coming out all the time about plastic's harmful effects on the environment and our health. But it was some plastivists from my hometown of Paonia in the mountains of Colorado that got me started on my anti-plastic journey.
I'm Carol Kwiatkowski. I'm the executive director of the Endocrine Disruption Exchange, otherwise known as TEDx. And what we do at TEDx is to compile and then disseminate scientific evidence on the health and environmental problems caused by low-level exposure to chemicals that interfere with hormones or endocrine action, otherwise known as endocrine disruptors.
My name's Joanna Calabrese. I spent 6 months on a trash cleanup brigade with several friends who were walking across the country from coast to coast picking up trash.
I'm Carolyn Yates. I'm here to talk about zero waste, and a large part of that is eliminating plastic.
Plastics, particularly BPA and phthalates and other things, are endocrine disruptors. They get absorbed through our skin, we breathe endocrine disruptors, but figuring out how a particular chemical gets into our body is kind of tricky.
I just said, I'm done. I can't bring in any more plastic because I've been trying to be responsible with it, like recycle it or reuse it, and it was just coming out of my ears, coming out of every cupboard and under every sink and drawers, popping with plastic. And I was like, I'm going to try 30 days without bringing any new plastic into the home.
Doctors and scientists are concerned about phthalates and BPA because they can act in similar ways to hormones naturally found in our body. In children, scientists have found an association between phthalates and changes in reproductive hormones and increased allergies, runny nose, and eczema. In adults, phthalates are associated with change in sperm quality. Bisphenol A, also known as BPA, may cause changes in cells, which can increase risk of cancers. In addition, BPA has been associated with increases in developmental disorders of the brain and nervous system in animals. These developmental disorders in animals are like problems such as ADHD in humans.
Plastic is always just kind of this like downplayed hush-hush thing, as is all waste, really. Like all the waste that we talk about with nuclear waste, whether it's nuclear waste or weapons arsenals or landfills. It's just kind of this like, ooh, we did that? Let's think about the future and let's create new technology.
Bisphenol A, in addition to creating hard plastics, is used in the lining of canned food, and that leaches into your food. Don't microwave in plastic. Don't store your food in plastic, particularly oily food. It leaches more readily. Nonstick isn't good either.
Most of the trash that we picked up was photodegraded plastic because, you know, you put a bottle in the landfill, it's going to take about 500 years to biodegrade. That doesn't count for all the stuff that's sitting around, like on the periphery, like, and all the stuff on the side of the roads that's being broken down by the sun, and then it turns into this basically little pellet, and then it's much easier for animals to ingest.
30 days was a little window into realizing just how much we were consuming and going, wow, okay, now what are we going to do if we're not going to buy this in plastic or this in plastic or this in plastic?
Soft, flexible toys that have phthalates in them, you put those in the bathtub. I don't know of the research on this, but I imagine that leaches out into the tub.
We thought we just needed trash grabbers to pick up trash, but we ended up having to like get all these special tools like brushes so that we could like brush the plastic little shards into our bags. At a certain point in places that were extraordinarily trashy, we just only picked up plastic. Just this whole winning the future attitude to me is sometimes disappointing because I think my generation has a big responsibility to deal with the mess before we can plunge forward. We have to address the massive pile of crap that stands before us, the hill that we have to jump over it before we start, building on top of it.
Over the past 10 years, many countries and a handful of American cities are trying to do away with plastic bags by discouraging their use through taxes, fees, or outright bans. In 2002, Bangladesh was the first country to ban plastic bags. The littered bags exacerbated flooding. Much of Australia, Haiti, Cameroon, Pakistan, Italy, and Ireland have banned plastic bags. In the U.S., California has enacted bag bans in most of their major cities. All counties and islands of Hawaii have banned plastic bags. Here in Colorado, fees now exist in Aspen, Boulder, and Carbondale. What about our little town of Paonia getting in on this trend? I spoke with Don of Don's Market about the recently proposed ban at his store. Don does have a 3-cent rebate for anyone who wishes to bring in their own bags, but he says he won't ban bags until it's legislated. He doesn't want to alienate one customer if he doesn't have to.
We all follow the laws, and at some point when it gets legislated, now all of a sudden your choice isn't have Don's Market legislate it to me before the Colorado State does, but it doesn't happen at City Market, or it doesn't happen at Walmart. I mean, it's kind of, at that point, if it is legislated, obviously we go, okay, now it's a charge to do that.
Okay, so a bag ban is probably not going to happen in my town. Not right now, anyway. Well, then what about recycling? How effective is it just to toss it in a bin and forget about it?
It's a really big challenge financially to recycle in rural areas, mostly because of transportation costs.
Recycling is a management program around the prolific amount of waste that we are producing. Is it getting recycled? Where does it go? And there's a lot of questions there. I don't get many direct answers. Even the gal at the landfill center was like, well, we do our best. It gets brokered out on occasion, especially like plastic film, which you have to accumulate a lot of. And then a broker has to come in and say, okay, we need this much in plastic.
The amount of oil that's involved with trucking it from your little town to the next big city that can then ship it off to other major cities where it actually can get reprocessed into new products. It's a lot cheaper for the county to just put trash in the landfill. It costs them about $30 a ton to put trash in the landfill, whereas it costs about $80 a ton to recycle.
Often it's sat there, maybe part of it is contaminated. It's a real problem, plastic film for one, but the other plastics too. Percentages of it get sent to their proper plants or mills to be broken back down depending on their polymer blends. But a lot of it actually ends up, maybe 7 steps down the road in a different landfill.
The EPA estimates that 93% of plastics we use each year are not recycled. If this is the case, then what's better for the landfill, paper or plastic? I spoke with Phil Rosensky of the American Progressive Bag Alliance, an organization that advocates for the plastic industry by fighting bag bans and promoting American-made plastic products as the best environmental choice. Rosinski developed a recycled product line for Hilex Poly and believes that plastic recycling is widespread and effective. He also says plastic is better for a landfill when it ends up there.
What we see is most paper bags that aren't recycled go to a landfill, and nothing biodegrades in a landfill. Modern landfills are established to not biodegrade stuff because it creates methane gas, which is a hazard to the public. So they're all engineered to not do that. They're capped off when they're done. They're sealed with plastic liners to keep any contaminants from coming out. That's a common myth, is people believe that things biodegrade in a landfill. They don't. So you want to be more efficient with the items that do go to a landfill, and that's one of the reasons plastic performs better than paper. It's one of the many reasons.
There is stuff in landfill that biodegrades down, because you have the food scraps and banana peels and lettuce. And I know when we started down on this east end, there was a lot of low spots there, so something had to decompose to bring the low spots down. We use dirt to cover with. Some people don't have dirt to cover with, so they'll use tarps or spray something on it, some kind of emulsified on it to keep the paper down at night.
That's Kevin Hunt. He's the manager of the Adobe Buttes landfill outside Cedar Edge, Colorado. Kevin runs a tight ship. Any trash they get is immediately buried. I don't see or smell much of anything. It's such a beautiful and tidy landfill that I consider taking the family there for a picnic.
When you go to the grocery store, do you get paper or plastic?
I get plastic.
Do you recycle?
No.
Why?
I just have one dumpster and I throw it in there. I don't have much stuff. I try to use like glass containers and I reuse stuff like that. So,
do you ever just look at trash and just be like, people are disgusting? Like, you know what I mean? Like, or are you just sort of used to it?
I guess I'm used to it because, well, you can look at it right out there. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, but it's just me being here one day. I think to look at it every day, I mean, do you ever kind of just feel like we're just making too much trash?
No, I don't see it that way. They come up here and dump it, and my guys push it over and pack it, and we make sure it's covered, and we look for stuff to make sure what we're burying is going to be safe and not hurt the environment.
And what about all the plastic that doesn't end up in a landfill or a plastic recycling center?
My name is Captain Charles Moore. I'm the skipper of the oceanographic research vessel Algita, and I'm founder of the Algolita Marine Research Institute, which has a mission to restore and protect the marine environment. And then at a race called the Transpac from Los Angeles to Honolulu, and it was on the way back from that race that I started seeing these bits of trash. It was crossing that central part of the gyre, the Eastern Pacific High. Every time I came on deck, looked around and saw some plastic, and I thought, well, this can't be a trail of plastic crumbs for me to follow back to the California coast. This has got to be bigger. It's got to be in this whole system. So I came back 2 years later with sampling equipment and found that indeed this is an accumulation zone for plastic. It's been named the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, or the Eastern Garbage Patch, and it had more plastic in it than plankton. I was pissed off because this is the largest, most remote part of our world. This is as far from land as you can get anywhere on Earth. This is the center of the Pacific Ocean, where there's nothing, and there shouldn't be anything man-made. And to see this man-made debris out there was alarming. It's really a visceral kind of, from a surfer and diver and someone who recreates, you know, since childhood in the beautiful, clean waters of the Pacific Ocean to realize that our civilization and just our lifestyle had unintentionally, but nevertheless, fouled the most pristine part of the great Pacific Ocean was quite offensive to me.
After going maybe a handful of times and paddling in these waterways and these harbors, I was face first in the liquid landfill. And I started to get concerned about that. After doing a lot of research, it became apparent that this was an issue that could affect the human race in a negative way, and I decided to get behind it.
In 2007, Tom Jones set a world record paddling the entire length of California on a stand-up paddleboard. He did this to raise awareness about the ever-growing pollution problem from plastics in our oceans.
I paddled from Oregon to Mexico, so I've seen every inch of coastline that we have. And it was very apparent to me early on, and it's very apparent here where I live in Huntington Beach, that, you know, the cities that have tourism are very proactive about making sure that the beaches are clean. In the in-between spots, however, you know, you see the natural progression of pollution.
Indeed, when we did our study off of the San Gabriel River here in Long Beach or off of the Biona Creek, which drains Los Angeles, we found more plastic than plankton there as well. And we also found it at different depths. Most of our work had been done on the surface. We wanted to see what was in the water column and down near the bottom, and we found that in calm conditions in the coastal zone, there was more plastic hovering near the bottom than there was on the surface. Now we've transitioned into looking at the pollution that is attached to these plastic particles and how it's being ingested by fish. Our latest study is of the fish in the coastal zone here in Southern California and how much plastic they're eating and how polluted that plastic is and how it's changing their physiology.
Really, the answer right now is that if we're dumping more plastic in the environment every single solitary day than the combined weight of every man, woman, and child on the planet Earth, maybe the first thing we could do is slow down the flow in.
Since plastic, by its own definition, is infinitely moldable, that's what plastic means, we've used it to mold and create shapes of every type and color. And those, when they get together out in the ocean, create all kinds of habitats. We really find a much greater biomass of creatures living out there, but it may be at the expense of those creatures that lived there originally, that are indigenous to the area. I've seen condominiums for fish out there, milk crates that have like 6 or 12 separate apartments in them, actually populated by different fish. So you can throw a milk crate overboard and it turns into a condominium for fish. I call it affordable housing. At the same time that plastics are serving as a source for these toxicants, they're also acting as a sponge for the toxicants that are what we call legacy pollutants that are out floating around in the seawater. Things like the mercury from power plants, things like the PCBs from transformers, things like the DDTs from pesticide use, those legacy pollutants that are very persistent, that last a long, long time, then get absorbed into the plastics in seawater. So they become these, they don't just lose their pollutant load, they also increase their pollutant load. They're serving as sources and sinks for pollutants in the ocean. The sunlight, the UV rays hitting these plastics in the ocean makes them brittle, makes them crack, makes them break into little bits, and then they become just bite-sized for the fish that are out there. We found 35% of the fish we caught out there had eaten an average of 2 pieces of plastic each. Recent studies have shown that these pollutants that are absorbed after they're floating around in the ocean then transfer into the tissue of the fish. They get them both from the plankton that are feeding out in the ocean and picking up these pollutants, and also from eating the plastic that's associated with them out there.
Is there any fish that's safe to eat at this point?
You want to eat low on the food chain. You want to eat the smaller fish that haven't had a lot of time to accumulate these pollutants. And you want to probably eat them from areas that aren't heavily polluted.
I think it's true. People are, you know, their lives are full, and it's overwhelming sometimes just to deal with, you know, the everyday routines that you have to get through. And adding more to that, to what's on people's plate already, can be just overwhelming. And there's a real concern on my part about giving too much information to people, and it paralyzes them. And so they do nothing because they just can't. It's just too much. Most people have something in the back of their minds that bothers them. You know, like they might, when they put that, you know, plastic in the microwave, they know. And so those things that come up for you is what you should address first, because when you do, then you feel good about it. You know, you've done the thing that's really bothering you the most. You're not doing it because someone else told you. You're doing it because it's been bothering you. And then that feels good that you've made that change. And then those things start to snowball little by little, so that it's not an overwhelming process to engage in.
When you stick your neck out or you pull your head out of the sand, on occasion, people around you will either, you'll be met with like, oh my God, you're crazy, I could never do that. Or most of the time in my experience, people's eyes light up and they go, how are you doing this? And they ask more questions, they want more information. And then it reaffirms my own empowerment, and I realize I am powerful. This does make a difference.
I think one of the first things that was very apparent to me was it was bigger than any one person or one company or one organization. So I did research in the biblical times what the way that they solved problems that were enormous was they went to all of the adjacent villages and they got the elders from those villages and they brought a bigger circle of influence together and worked on it and problem solved that way. So I thought to myself, well, it was good enough for them. It's probably going to work well for this issue. So that's sort of the approach that I took, was to try to go out and use my athletic ability as a wow factor, if you will. And then when people said, wow, why are you doing that? Try to draw them into the circle of influence and solve this problem.
It's tricky because environmental scientists are really trying to appeal to that logic that is the mainstream thinking by quantifying or monetizing natural resources and social resources and saying, like, you know, when we cut down X number of trees or X number of streams are polluted, like, it means this cost to the economy in healthcare or in tourism or whatever. But I think we need to bring the conversation back to, like, basic human rights to health, and that is something that is definitely overlooked in the media, the conversation that is happening on the ground in all these communities.
I guess the thing that I'm most excited about is, since I started this in 2005, fast forward to 2014, the consciousness of people in general and the cause itself has shifted. The pendulum's actually kind of stalled, if you will. And now it's actually starting to shift the other direction. And I've seen this happen. And now I'm even more excited about being a part of it.
It's not that it's not doable, it's that it's obscured by the distracted lifestyles we all lead. And I think that's what keeps me going, is the fact that our potential is so great and the distance we need to go is so short that it seems like we could have a worldwide awakening at any moment. And it's just going to require this mass to become critical before that can happen. And then my mission is to create that critical mass.
And what can people do if they want to be part of that critical mass? What's the first step you'd take if somebody just all of a sudden became aware of this problem and wants to do something?
I'd tell them to withdraw as much as they could from the status quo, to eliminate the things that they thought were necessary that really aren't, to simplify their lives. This was one of our greatest philosophers in America, Henry David Thoreau, that said, simplify. Really, the complexity that we're drawn into as, and believe me, solutions that we're advocating for our problems will be complex. But in our own personal lives, we can eliminate a lot of crap. And that's the first step to change, is seeing that really you can change. Why can't the world?
How to Be a Plastivist was produced for KVNF in 2014. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Special thanks to Tom Hirschberg, Joanna Calabrese, Amber McDaniel, Emily Guerin, and Jake Ryan for production assistance. For more information about plastivism, visit plasticpollutioncoalition.org.
Broken devotion, can I jump in the gun and fly over the ocean? Can I jump in the gun and string up a net across Lafayette and sing up my deeds while I'm gone? And I'll spin some lies to tell you upon my return from the ends of the earth. She and I would death-defying promenade. She and I would profligate as derrigers. She and I were for a Burton tailor-made.